Okay, again, take your seats as quickly as you can because we are about to get started. Good morning and welcome to the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. My name is Marilyn Russell. Some of you may know from, I do mornings for 95.7 Ben FM here in Philadelphia. I also have a show solely dedicated to advocating for women and nonprofits here and nationwide. It's Woman of the Week on Ben FM Sunday mornings. Check it out. Some of these women have been featured on the show. We're really glad you're here to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and in this community. Thrilled that you're here. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Everybody's making new friends today. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to your empowerment to inspire and to make your mark in and around everywhere for your company, for yourself, for your careers, and of course, most importantly, maybe in your communities. I think you've chosen what is probably one of the strongest panels of the conference today. I am so thrilled to moderate for this group. Let me introduce you to Shama Hyder, award-winning CEO of the Marketing Zen Group, a global online marketing and digital PR company. Hyder has aptly been dubbed the Zen Master of Marketing. Oh! We're going to learn so much from all of these guys. The Marketing Zen Group has grown to include a team of 30 and serves clients ranging from publicly held Fortune 500 companies to privately held small businesses and nonprofit organizations across the globe. She's author of Zen of Social Media Marketing and has a book signing at 11 a.m., so we're going to keep things moving here. She has too many awards and accolades to mention. The most important thing is getting her up to this podium. She's been honored at both the White House. She shared a stage with President Obama and the United Nations as one of the top 100 young entrepreneurs in this country. Shama Hyder, everyone. Give her a nice warm welcome.
Thank you, guys. This is the closest I get to being a rock star, by the way, so like I've got to make the most of it. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'll tell you a brief story, I think, that really personifies personal branding, and then I'm really excited to share the stage with these three awesome women, and hopefully our goal here is that you leave here feeling a little more empowered and having some tactical information about how you can build your personal brand, whether you're an entrepreneur, you work within a corporation, a nonprofit, whatever it is that gets you up in the morning, gets you excited, how you can be a thought leader in that field. You know, I started my company when I was 23 years old. I graduated from the University of Texas at Austin. I learned not to do this in Oklahoma, by the way. They don't like that very much. But I did my master's in organizational communication and technology, and I did my thesis on Twitter when it had about 2,000 users. So if anyone's curious, it's got about 375 million users today, and it's also why I have @Shama as my Twitter username. It's just my first name. And people are always like, how did you get your first name as a username? I'm like, I don't know, just be the first 2,000 users, I guess. And I could have gotten just @S if I really wanted at that time. You know, but what's interesting is when I wrote my thesis on Twitter, when I entered the world of social media, I thought I would go get a job. I thought I would, you know, do what you're supposed to do, finish your degree, go out, get a job. And what I thought was really interesting when I went out there was that there was one big problem. Can anybody guess what that problem might have been? No jobs, but even worse, no industry. Right? Because social media really didn't exist as an industry 78 years ago. I would say, I'm doing this, I'm really excited about it. I think it'll change the way we communicate, it'll change the way we do business. And they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, what's Twitter? Right? Isn't Facebook something my 13-year-old uses? They didn't really get it. And so, you know, it was a very interesting point in my life, looking at it retrospectively. At that point, I would say I was very depressed, but I also learned that I'm a great baker. I know people bake when they're depressed, but I discovered something. But that's really what, you know, compelled me to start my own company. And I started the Marketing Zen Group as a social media agency. And, you know, we've grown tremendously since then. But what's interesting about this whole journey is just, you know, I started the company at 23 with $1,500 and no network, no connections. And really the way I was able to build it was through my personal brand and building my personal brand. And so in a lot of ways, the company and I became synonymous, but the more I created in terms of content, the more I spoke, the more I used my platform and to share my passion, the more the company grew. So we really think I'm sort of a testament poster child for what personal branding can do. But really, we're here to hear from the panel. And so what I would love to do is introduce these guys very quickly to you. We've got a great set of questions I'm gonna dive into that we've discussed that we think will be helpful for everyone. And then if you have questions, I hope you save them, because the last 20 minutes of this panel, we're gonna be taking your questions. Sound good? Yes? Okay, fantastic. All right, so I'm gonna introduce my panel real quick and then sit down and have this discussion with these ladies, starting with Miss Lovie Ajayi, who is a, sorry, you guys getting that feedback? Okay, all right. Who is a veteran blogger and author. We're good? All right, okay. I'm gonna do that again. It's Lovie Ajayi, veteran blogger and author of I'm Judging You. Lovie, you wanna hold up your book really quick? Lovie fans in the house! So that's great. And then of course we have Molly Watson, who's COO of Tierney, which is a full service communications agency. So we've got a lady in the C-suite, killing it right now. So glad to have you here, Molly.
Thank you.
And then we have Michelle Ruiz, who is a bilingual entrepreneur, CEO of a communication strategy firm, and author of Content Marketing for Lawyers. So couldn't have asked for a better panel. I'm so excited. So ladies, let's get started. And I wanna ask the first question, and you guys, we'll start with Lovie and we'll just kind of work our way back here. And I think this is really important because so many people have the mindset that personal branding is kind of like a bad word, right? Or there's some sense of, I don't want to toot my horn, my mom told me not to do that, right? There's some element of feeling a mindset block, I think, when it comes to, do I go out there and put myself out there? So I'm really curious as to what you guys think about how do you overcome that? How do you overcome the sense of I'm talking about myself and I'm okay with it?
You just have to be okay with it. Because here's the thing is, you know, I think women are especially discouraged from owning our badassness. So we're supposed to kind of downplay it to make other people kind of feel better. So they want us to walk in a room and be self-deprecating. No, like I'm a boss and that's fine. And just knowing that you being able to speak to your own power is a powerful thing because it might inspire somebody else to do the same about theirs. So I think we just need to be okay with it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think part of that is getting to understand who you are authentically. And I think for women, and I spent a lot of time, I'm so lucky to work in a firm that has 70% female and 50% of our staff is under the age of 30. So I have a little on them. But I'm constantly talking to the staff and especially the women to say, you need to learn how to be comfortable, but you have to have the work there.
Yeah.
So for me, what you hear from me today is your quality work and an amazing attitude. And then it's this balance of authenticity, grace, and humility. Because as much as we want to be like marching through the halls, and we still will have unconscious or overtly conscious bias if we are assertive, could be read as itchy, right? So I think for you to really think about who you are and make sure you have the goods when you start to say, these are my accomplishments.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, then nobody can question what you have. But it's this balance of like grace and humility that will work better for women, I think, right now as we continue to kind of bust through that horrific myth.
So I'm going to address that question too, because it's for us Latinas, it can be also a cultural issue, right? Because we're raised to, you know, you don't put yourself out there, you don't brag, you don't, you know. There's a difference between branding and elevating yourself as a thought leader and bragging.
Yep, right.
And if you're posting to make others feel bad, I'm better, I've got more awards, I've got you kind of get the sense, right? That's bragging. There's a whole other focus when you're elevating and you actually are providing value. And that's a difficult thing to get your head around. And so when you think about what you offer is actually helping other people, it's of value. There's a reason why you're putting yourself out there. So that's what I recommend, that you take into consideration the difference between bragging, self-promotion, etc. The bottom line is you can't help people if people don't know about you.
Right.
Right? So that's how you have to look at it.
Yeah, don't be Kanye or anything, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. So what I'm hearing is, you know, it's the intent matters, where you're coming from, and making sure that you do have something of note to be able to say, and then just own your badassness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so I love that. And this time I'll start with you, Michelle. There's, you know, a sense of content being king, and we've all heard that content's really important. What role does content play in building your personal brand, as far as do you need to create it? Can you curate it? You just your overall perspective, and then we'll just go around.
Sure, absolutely. content is really critical at this juncture, meaning at this juncture where we are with technology, social media. You know, in communications, marketing, branding, thought leadership, reputation management, crisis communications, all those types of things, it's all about the story that you tell. And now with social, we're so inundated with so many messages and advertising and promotion. You know, advertising's one-way communications. This is what we do. Come buy from us, mm-hmm. right? Content leads to engagement, leads to relationship building, leads to trust. Oh, wow, you've got a blog on XYZ. You've got a blog on ABC. Oh, you must really know what you're talking about. Oh, let me find out more about what you're talking about. Oh, you've got a book, Marketing Zen. Oh, let me take a look at this. Therefore, content starts to build a relationship. Oh, I'm starting to know who you are and about you before I've even contacted you or met you. So content is really, really important. The other thing is, and I come from a news broadcasting background, so I totally get the whole idea about content. Oh my gosh, how am I going to create content? How much content do I create versus curating? And I say, focus on a few pieces of really good content that demonstrate your expertise, your knowledge, your, you know, this the information that you can share with others. So that could be videos. By the way, videos are very compelling. It could be an infographic, it could be a white paper, a case study, other kinds of things. And then curate, i.e. share content along the same lines from other people as a part of your mix. You don't have to create everything, but you do want to create some. And I also recognize that, by the way, there are a lot of tools out there to create content, but the truth is what really matters is the messaging, the words that are used, and what you're conveying. So if you're not an expert in communications, marketing, a good copywriter, it's worth the investment, because high quality content leads to a lot of engagement and ultimately to achieve your personal and business goals.
I would just quickly add, because I think that's important, but the content has to match the real deal. So the brand that I focus on every day is face-to-face, and you'll find I don't have a lot of channels out there, because what I do requires face-to-face with my colleagues, my friends, my family, the nonprofit boards. So when you think about the content you put out there, make sure that when you get the chance to meet that person face-to-face, they're not like, huh. Like, so if you guys went and checked out my LinkedIn profile, you'd see that little blurb up there, hopefully. Sounds a lot like who I am, you know, when you meet me in person. So you have to have all that content, but we hide behind this and we put that out there. Talk about everybody who's had a bad match.com date, right? That content went wrong. But you want to match it. So make sure you can live up to what you put out there, because I still believe in face-to-face in such a big way.
And I mean, for me, honestly, people hear the word branding, it's very buzzwordy.
Yeah.
And everyone uses it for everything now. In the most simplest terms, your brand is what people think about when you're not in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What they hear when they think about you, when they hear your name. So in terms of content, what they're going to expect from you becomes your brand. So for me, I create a lot of content that's funny. So humor is firmly in my umbrella. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm a curator of shenanigans and foolery sometimes. So like, but I also create my own. So here's the thing is, That thing that people come to expect of you is essentially your brand. So you do that by building content that's consistent. So it's like how I came to be known as a humorist online is people know that if they go on my website, 90% of the things that you're going to read is going to be funny. Even if I'm tackling a very serious issue, you're going to find some humor in it. So it's because over time I was consistently creating humorous content. That's essentially how you use content to build your brand, whatever it is that you want to represent. And it is best when it's you in real life, because when people meet me in real life, they're like, oh, this fits, because this is exactly the voice I heard. Mm-hmm. that content needs to be consistent with who you are, because then having to create a new version of yourself is too much work, one. And two, you're going to run out of stuff to say that's not you. So that's where the content thing comes in. Just think about what you want people to think about when they hear your name, what they want, what you want them to say when you're not in the room. That is what you need to create.
Yep. Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, valuable, right? How do you add value to your community and then do it consistently? I think that's the other thing too, is that's the only thing I'd add, is that whatever you do, is you create this content, it's not you create one thing and then you're done, right?
Right.
It's that consistency that you're creating with. I told you guys about, I started my company with $1,500. And what's interesting is people always say, how did you get your first client? Like, how did people even know what you were doing? And it was through my blog. I started a blog and I would write about marketing. And in fact, I would attend conferences like this where I would take copious notes on the sessions and then I would post that, mm-hmm. right? Because it was curating content. It was like, all right, well, I'm still getting started. I'm learning. So I would look at what are people sharing and then add my perspective to it. And I think you should never underestimate your perspective and how important mm-hmm. that is. I mean, if you say, well, it's all been said before, but you haven't said it. It hasn't mm-hmm. been said through your, you know, through your eyes, through your perspective. And I think that's important. So the other thing, and I'll start with you, Lovey, because we all do this, is how do you manage a personal brand when you wear multiple hats? Like, I know we're up here, we're in the C-suite, we're authors, and we're keynote speakers, and we're, you know, and then there might be other stuff that we do even outside of that. So how do you, you know, what's the best advice that you guys have for managing your personal brand when you are indeed juggling so many hats? Does one get more preference? Do you focus on the thing that's paying the bills more? Like, you know, what's the catch?
So it's a juggle. So I have my blog, awesomelylovey.com, which is a humor blog and pop culture, all that stuff. I'm a speaker and a tech teacher, so I have a blog, Awesomely Techie. I speak at conferences on technology and business. And then I'm the executive director of a national nonprofit organization called the Red Pump Project, which raises awareness about the impact of HIV and AIDS on women and girls. So I'm in three different pockets, right? How I bring them all together in a room is I use color. So my signature color is red, right? My nonprofit organization is the Red Pump Project, and we use red shoes to basically get people's attention and start conversation about HIV and AIDS and how it affects women. And red is across all my platforms. So I use color to tie everything together. Not only is it me and my voice that's speaking for, well, Red Pump is its own entity, so it's not my voice, it's the organization. But when I walk in a room, I usually have on a red pair of shoes. If I'm speaking at a conference, I usually have on something red on me. Even if I'm not wearing something red, I have on a red lip. So here's the thing is, even while I'm sitting up here, people who know Red Pump see my red shoes, they're like, yep, I understand it. And color is actually a very powerful thing to use to tie your brands together, because color emotes certain ideas and reactions. So even when I am not in the room and people see red shoes, I will get tweets from people who are like, I just saw this amazing red shoes and thought about you. Or they'll see something red, period, and be like, this just made me think about you. So you can actually use color or even a pattern. Pick a signature of yours, and it actually makes it easier to even get dressed. If you have a signature, some people, one of my friends, leopard is her signature. If she's speaking anywhere, there's something leopard on her. It doesn't mean she's wearing all leopard everything. It means she might even have on a leopard bracelet. It might mean she has on a leopard tank top. So it actually ties everything that you're doing together in that way. For me, red is my favorite color, so it makes it easy for me to use it all the time. So I use color to use all my stuff.
I love that.
Yeah, you know, that can be challenging to make sure that your brand is consistent depending on what space that you play. So in my instance, I've got my own blog, and I'll tell you about the evolution of it. So it started as My Life as a Latina Entrepreneur. But then I became an author. I'm also CEO of a company, a communications firm, and we work with very large corporations. I'm also hired as an influencer by large brands to represent them online and on social. So across all those platforms, how do I maintain consistency? So here's a couple of tips. The first is authenticity. And by that I mean making sure that your message and what you stand for is consistent. And I'll raise a name, Ivanka Trump. Her brand online is clearly very pro-woman, mm-hmm. right? But she's gotten involved in her father's campaign, and there's all of a sudden there's lots of questions about her authenticity, right? So if you just look at that, that's an example of how it can be really challenging and tricky to manage that. So my point is you want to make sure that whatever space you're playing in, no matter what hat you're wearing, that your core values and principles stay the same. Because the minute they don't, and it brings up questions about your authenticity, it leads to, can I trust you? Mm-hmm. Can I trust your brand? Can I trust what you're doing over here? Mm-hmm. So that would be the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like you, orange is my favorite. I'm not wearing orange today, but orange is my favorite color. So it crosses platforms. It crosses whether, you know, the company logo versus my personal logo. Now, I mentioned to you, I started my blog almost 6 years ago. My life as a Latina entrepreneur. But as I got, I started my firm, and then I published a book. I realized my life as a Latina entrepreneur was too confining, and so I had to expand my personal brand. So first I had to communicate about it, and then removed the tagline, my life as a Latina entrepreneur, because there's so much else that I'm doing, and I'm very involved in advocacy for women. So, but you have to communicate about that. So you can actually evolve your brand, as long as you share the reason and you bring your followers and your community into that process.
I love that. And so, Molly, I'd be really curious, you know, how does that look when you're within a corporation, right? You're in the C-suite. How does that, and I know there's a lot of women in here that have that, and then you're not only juggling maybe wearing multiple hats, but now you have to be cognizant of the fact that you are part of a corporation, you sort of represent that. So any tips on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. We are, you know, as I said, an incredible firm, but we're part of a large global agency holding company. And while we happen to be all female in the C-suite and a 70% female firm, we are in an industry that is still heavily male. But, you know, you guys are hearing things that are the same, that are authentic. You know, who your brand is, and I agree with you, I think brand is an overused term. It's really your reputation, right? And it's a lifelong evolution. And if you have to figure out what it is, the good, the bad, and the ugly, before you put it out there and be consistent. But for me, so, you know, I get to work in this amazing place where, you know, you have to understand that your brand influences others in ways that you never even know. I mean, I wear, my signature is 4-inch heels. If I wasn't gonna like do this, I'd show, you know? And I walk with a purpose because I love what I do. But I found out from my team that when they hear that stomp, 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 they're like, ah! And I'm like, I'm just happy to be here. What's wrong? So I think that you have to continue to evolve it and think about it. And in a corporation, what I've done now as I've gotten in this, and I, like you, I sit on charitable boards, I advocate for kids with special needs because I have two kids with special needs, so I'm like at the school. You try things out that feel good to you in the safest place possible. So maybe you're not comfortable to try being more assertive at work yet, but if you are in a book club, you know, or if you are working out with your personal trainer, you know, like there are all these moments for women where we try things. And what I push the team all the time to is we call it stretch. Try it. And I'll even, I mean, I still get scared walking into a boardroom where I am the only female that doesn't have gray hair. Well, you know what I'm saying? You know? But just try it and then transfer it everywhere else and feel like it's consistent.
Yeah, you know, I think the fascinating thing about it is as we talk about branding, and it is a little hackneyed of a term, is that it's not static, right?
No,
it changes
exactly.
from your life phase to life phase. And I know when I started, I was thinking about myself as an entrepreneur. I ended up writing two books, and now I'm like, oh, I'm an author. Then it's like, oh, you know, you're a brand ambassador. And I do think it helps to find a common thread that you can, you know, so whether it's a color, whether it's sort of how you hold yourself in a certain way. But for me, you know, the word has been Zen. So my company is called Marketing Zen. My book's called The Zen of Social Media Marketing, and I've got Zen Media. And for me, Zen is like a philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. The sense that how do you make things struggle-free in the digital age? Like when you go against the grain, it's hard. When you go with the flow, it's a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So that Zen is kind of what personifies everything that I do, and I'm able to use that and weave that across everything, but I know that it's an evolution. So you talked about changing up your website, right, and changing up that content and making sure that you are constantly communicating that, and then making sure you try it in a place that feels safe. So maybe you're just trying it at a church or a different group where, you know, you're not so scared about what's going to happen, and then just to consistently build on that, obviously, as you have, Lovie. So I know one thing that a lot of women are probably thinking in here is, okay, but you guys have been doing this for a while, right? You've been at this for a while. What if today is day one? What if you're just starting out? So my question for you is, if you were starting out today fresh, so there's no Latina blog, there's no Lovie book, there's no COOs, like, you are just starting out, you have entered in here, you're like, personal branding, I'm on, like, I'm on the bandwagon. What would you do differently? So give me one thing that you would do differently today, knowing what you know, right? Any of you guys can jump
in. I can say that I would take people up on their offer to help me out. So I was recently visiting my alma mater, Indiana University, go Hoosiers, sorry, anybody, and met several young co-eds who were interested in this field and talking to me, and I handed out my cards, and I looked them in the eye, and I said, call me, I love this, or email me, I swear to God, I'll write you back. And of 10 of them, only one did it, and I know it's really nerve-wracking. So whether it's, you know, to reach out and say, hey, how was that? I have somebody else that I said just informally, you're doing an amazing job. She's surrounded by all these women, and she's middle management. And I said, you know, if you need, like, a female to run things off of, because this is, I'm here. So I would take people up on the offer to connect or to help out, because I find over and over again, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 women, for sure, and men say, I'm so glad you called. That's what I would do.
I love that.
That's so good. You know what? That's it. I can't even add to it because that's perfect. Because I know how many times people actually come to me and say, yes, let me know if you need help. Honestly, on that, so when it was time for me to write, this is my first book, so when it was time, a lot of people were like, let me know how I can help. And I didn't take up a lot of people on their offer until it was around time for me to finally do it. And every single time that I tapped on somebody, they were like, yeah. Like, I remember I was at an event in February, and Shonda Rhimes is like, I can't wait to read your book. Make sure you send it to me. I sent it to Shonda late.
Because you were working on it.
Because, right. No, and because I was kind of like, Shonda's not going to have time for me.
Yeah.
But when I, like, her assistant ends up messaging me and be like, hey, she's looking for your book. And I was like, what? So it's that idea that sometimes we have the imposter syndrome of thinking, who are we to actually receive the help from that person?
Yeah.
And when you realize that the person actually actively wants to be a resource to you, it is, one, it's a humbling experience to be like, wow. But two, it actually affirms what you do and actually lets you know that, you know what, even if you asked for that person's help and they said no, the no won't kill you.
Right.
So like Shonda ended up blurbing my book. And I was just like, imagine if I never sent her this book. So I do think we need to start pushing past our own imposter syndrome and just understanding that even if you hear a no, it's not gonna kill you.
You know, that's a very valid point, the imposter syndrome. And by the way, everyone has moments of doubt. That's really what it is. It's moments of doubt. But if you think about it, every expert, every thought leader started somewhere.
Yeah.
They had a day one
where
they had those very similar questions. In answer to your question, I would have written my book earlier. It took me, I just published the book, are we in 2016? Yes, earlier. I try to remember. It's this year, January this year. And I had, it was on my list to get to, and frankly, it took me a really long time to get it out, but that was because I have a very fast-growing business doing communications for very large corporations, so it took me a while, but the minute I published it, there were so many benefits, including in the corporate space. So, you know, I go into a business development meeting with, you know, companies like a Shell Oil or some of these others, and I leave my book behind, and I say, oh, by the way, I just, you know, brought my book. I'm happy to leave it for you. It's like, whoa, who comes in with their own book, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. It just immediately elevates you as a thought leader.
You.
It differentiates you. So I think that's what I would have done differently.
I love that. So find your differentiator. Don't be scared, right? And say yes when someone offers you the opportunity to help. Like, why wouldn't you? So I love this. I know we could probably go all day long. I do want to give people the opportunity for questions. I'm going to turn it over to Marilyn now. While Marilyn comes up, you know, just know that we might not have time for every question, but, you know, we are offering ourselves. If you guys want to find us on social sites,
on
tweet
social
us, LinkedIn, whatever might be, you know, a preference for you guys want to connect with us, I know we're more than happy. Find us later at the conference while we're around to book signings. There's plenty of them today. But, you know, take us up on our offer to help you, especially when you're here and you have the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Please give them a nice round of applause. Lovey, Molly, Michelle, Shama. While I have all these people in the room, I just want to take 1 second. At Marilyn Russell. Okay? Please follow me. And because I had sort of this fangirl geek moment with Lovey, I just wanted to thank her. You know, when I knew I was moderating this panel, I tweeted to Lovey, and she answered me. And don't you get, like, the biggest jolt when someone famous, you know, does that? Or someone you admire and you respect? So, you know, this panel is particularly great about connecting and reaching out. And the best panel to learn from here today, Molly is one of my mentors in Philadelphia. I'm so grateful. And I'm just getting to know Michelle. So can you guys all give out your Twitter handles or whatever your favorite social media platform is so we can all get to know you a little bit better through social?
I am all over the interwebs.
Just look for the red.
Right. I am at Lovey, L-U-V-V-I-E, across all my platforms, and I have a bonus Twitter account that's at I Love It, I-L-U-V-V-I-T, where I actually talk about useful stuff and not shenanigans all day. So yeah, find me everywhere. I'm easy.
I do most of my talking in person. So you're not going to find me. You will find a lot of me at Hello Tierney, which is my firm. And if you guys want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm embarrassed about right now because I don't have a lot of channels. But you guys reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I will get back to you. And you guys are really encouraging me to finish my book. I only have 5 chapters, and I'm too embarrassed to do it.
We can do a whole other session on writing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You can totally do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So Michelle Ruiz 1L across every platform except for Twitter, Michelle Ruiz 0-1.
Oh, somebody got the Michelle
I
Ruiz on Twitter?
Michelle Ruiz 0-1 on Twitter.
No, I'm saying someone actually got the actual,
yes, I wasn't one of the first 2,000. Like she was, so I actually had to like add a number, digits, to get my name, yes.
So guys, you can find me across the board, but if you type in Shama, Google will auto-finish for you with my last name. But it's at Shama, S-H-A-M-A on Twitter. On Facebook, you can find me on a Facebook page, LinkedIn, if that's what you prefer. Also, Instagram.
Instagram, too.
It's my full name, Shama Hyder, on Instagram. I don't Snapchat, guys. I know. I don't Snapchat. We do use it for clients, but I do not Snapchat yet. So that's the only platform I'm not on.
We can rally up a few people if you have a few questions. We'd love to hear from the audience right now. As you can see, mics are right in the center aisle for you. If you want to step up, we can at least, I think, squeeze in about maybe 5 people, 10 people step right up, get in line, because you definitely want to pick the brains of the fabulous people that we have on this panel here for you. Okay, what's your question, young lady?
Hi, I have a question in regards to branding on LinkedIn, branding on any social media platforms. As some of us approach higher age, I've recently had to even reduce the number of years. So instead of 20 years of experience, I've had to say, I have 15 years to compete with a lot of the younger, you know, more companies are wanting younger, fresh starts, innovative kind of folks. What is your advice on that?
Wow.
Why do you have to put the number of years?
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, you'll say, I have 15 years, I have 20 years of XYZ experience.
Yeah, no, I get it, because now I have 30, and I hate to say it out
exactly.
loud, right?
Exactly.
I hired kids who were like, I don't even want to go there. But so I think you really should reframe what you're about, not how long you've done it. You know what I mean? And one of the best things to do, especially if you're thinking about LinkedIn, is start looking at everybody else's. I mean, we have this, it's a pain in the butt to curate your LinkedIn channel. And I had some old stuff, but I use this thing in my head that if I'm gonna talk to my 85-year-old dad and explain what I do, how would I dumb it down and say it and also communicate kind of who I am. So I would encourage you to look around at lots of LinkedIn profiles to see what feels more comfortable. And I don't think you need to say the 30. You can say, you know,
experience.
Just experience driving revenue, building brands, right? Seasoned entrepreneur, even just entrepreneur. You know, and then they look at the bottom. Everybody, you know, the first thing you do is you go to the bottom, exactly. You see where you start. So, but just, you shouldn't apologize for it, but I absolutely appreciate that. I don't like to say it anymore either.
Actually, let me just ask you, what industry are you in? What business do you have?
Learning and development.
Learning and development. Okay. Darling, shine in your experience.
Yep.
That's a differentiator.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how long it is.
Don't hide it. When clients retain me, and I have over 20 years in communications experience, and I justify, by the way, our fee structure, okay, not entry-level fee structure,
that's right.
And I say, oh, we don't bill on an hourly basis. You're paying for 20 years of my experience in relationships mm-hmm. and the value on my team. Don't hide the fact that you've got experience. Play it up. Find the key differentiators around that. And maybe publish some content around that, but I wouldn't in the least think that that's something that's working against you.
So I'll speak to the flip side of that briefly, because as you're asking that question, I think a lot of people are like, well, what if I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum too,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if I'm
mm-hmm.
just getting started in my career, which was true for me. And so for me, I would look at people such as yourself and be like, how am I competing with people with 15, 20 years of experience?
Yep.
They're seasoned professionals. I'm starting out. And I think what's key here is that what you perceive as a weakness is someone else's strength. When I started, I hid my age. I never told people how old I was when I started my company, because I thought, they're going to be like, we're handing our marketing to a 23. You're like, what are we doing, right? So I always hid it. I was so conscious about it until one day a client called me out on it, and I was like, you know what? I was so scared, and I just confessed. I told him how old I was, and he said, you know, good. He's like, that's one of the reasons we hired you. And I never thought about it that way. He said, we wanted a digital native. They were looking for certain things. And so at that moment, I thought, well, if he thinks that way, maybe other people mm-hmm. also see that. So there will be a place where someone wants fresh ideas or
exactly.
fresh blood, or where it makes sense to have someone, right? And we all do that. But then there will be a time and place where someone's like, we want someone who's been in the trenches, who gets it. So I think whatever it is, whether you're on whatever part of the spectrum, you really just have to own it from a point of strength, not from a point of weakness.
Yeah. Word.
Don't diminish
helpful.
Yourself.
Great.
That's
Thank
the
you.
Key takeaway.
Thank
Do
you.
Not diminish yourself.
Thank
Great
you
question.
So much.
You
Great question. Next.
Hi, good morning. So my name is Sonia, the CEO of the Student Loan Doctor. I help people understand and create a plan to repay their student loan debt. And so my question
Love the branding.
Is, thank you. Yes. So, and also Instagram, the Student Loan Doctor. So my question is, my brand is new, but it's growing, it's increasing in popularity. And so one of the challenges that I have is, so I feel like my employer is watching, because it's public, and it's okay for now, like okay, but one of the challenges I foresee facing is, as it grows in popularity, because I use all my free time towards my own business, it almost feels like it's going to butt heads with what I do and where I'm going. And so I released a book called The Success Guide for Repaying Your Student Loans, and when the book dropped, quote unquote, and I had a book launch, things became a little different at work. And I'm still a hard worker, again, all day, every day, business and then work. But I don't know, is it ever going to come to a head, and what would be your advice with trying to do your thing and still work really hard for your company?
So my last full-time job was in 2010. Well, I got laid off my last full-time job in April 2010. I was doing marketing for nonprofits, and I was actually teaching other nonprofits how to tell stories using social media. So I started my own nonprofit a year before that in March 2009. And I would be at work thinking about my own nonprofit, but still trying to do that work. And my full-time job, like my employers, end up finding out about my nonprofit, because I end up being like profiled in the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times and like got all these awards. They actually end up being supportive of it because they saw the passion that I had for it. And funny enough, after I got laid off in April 2010 is when like my blog blew up and all these cool things happened. And I had a book launch in Chicago 2 days ago, and my old boss was there. And he was like, oh, I couldn't miss this.
Oh.
So here's the thing. One, if they feel some type of way about the success of your new business, even though you're doing real good work at work for them, there's nothing you can do to change that. You just have to keep doing what you're doing. And honestly, it should actually push you more to know that you are closer to your end game than you thought of actually running your own thing. Mm-hmm. So keep doing the good work that you're doing at work, but just know that you're building something that it might eventually be what lifts you up and is your cushion.
Thank you.
And when that side project starts making money, you'll be able to tell your people, it's time for me to go.
Exactly.
Good luck, kiddo. Next.
Hi, my name is Lori Barber. I'm president of Elements Image Consulting. What you wear matters for your authenticity. Mm-hmm. Fellow Indiana University grad.
Go Hoosiers!
My son's there.
Yes.
My son's there. He's a Hoosier.
Yes.
So I think a lot of times when people think of personal brand, they think of social media.
Yeah.
And personally, I don't, and it's probably my age. So I'm wondering how you see personal brand being relevant, not in the social media space, in other words, for people as they interact with people on a face-to-face basis, as well as in a corporate job or something not on social media.
So here's the thing, that's something I think about all the time. I spent the first part of my career in New York at a huge advertising agency on Madison Avenue, and about 2 years in, I was managing a team, and I had really bright young woman on my team, and this was in the 80s, and she had like massive hair, right? And she had a little bit of a soft voice, and we were going to the client to present a $120 million investment plan. And I said to her, listen, you are really smart, but we need to pull your hair back, and you need to wear something that's more demure because I need them to take you seriously. We need to do that. And I, you know, think all the time about how women are big advantages that we're soft and we're beautiful and we're, you know, intuitive, right? It's also our disadvantage. So, and, you know, there's a session right after this on unconscious bias. What we do as a businesswoman sets it. So you really need to think about, especially the transition from college to work, and, you know, find somebody you can ask. I mean, I tell every, I sort of have an apprentice that works with me, they've happened to be female, go get cheap black shoes at Payless. Buy 3 pairs of black pants. I'll text and say, Gap has black pants on sale, 2 for, you know. But to cultivate that and not be afraid to ask and, you know, find a mentor, because right, wrong, or indifferent, what we look like and how we show up in the physical can set us back even if we're brilliant. It's still sad, but I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but it's really important to think about it, especially when you're young.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Karen E. Wheeler. I'm a paralegal and freelance writer. And I just wanted to comment and say that when I looked through the brochure and I picked this presentation, I said that it was something that I needed to attend. And I agree with Marilyn. It's the best, and I'm so glad that I did pick it and attend it. Thank you, ladies. I learned so much from each and every one of you. Lovey, I had the pleasure not too long ago of hearing you on the Tom Joyner Morning Show with Jackie Reed, and after that, I quick wrote down the name of your book and said I have to buy that book, and so to imagine how happy and surprised I was when reading through the pamphlet and seeing that you were going to be a part of this presentation, I said, that's a sign. It's meant for me to be at this. So thank you.
I'm signing books, so 12 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, I couldn't agree more with what she just said. My name's Kristen Smedley, and I'm actually raising blind children. My 2 boys are blind. And I'm actually probably the happiest mom raising blind kids that anybody's ever met, so much so that when I started a research foundation for a cure, because it's actually happening here in Philadelphia, a friend of mine told me I would never raise any money because I was too damn happy raising these kids. Now, make no mistake, my life does suck every now and again, because it is a challenge. But I do have a blog, I have a book coming out, I have this research foundation that's 5 years in and crossed the $1 million mark, and I have a speaking business that I'm launching to change the the perspective of people with disabilities in this country. So this may seem like a ridiculous question, but it's my biggest hang-up right now. Across all of my platforms, and I've gotten very social to move my missions forward with all the platforms, I do stink at Snapchat, but I have teens that are teaching me that. Across all those, and especially with LinkedIn, I mean, I am loud and excited and all of that. Does your headshot, that's what's hanging me up. People, I see these headshots, and I don't even recognize them at a conference because they're windblown and all that, you know, and I typically have like a trucker hat on because I have no time for any of this, you know. So what would your feedback be on that kind of piece of this branding?
Sure, I can take that question. I would say that it doesn't have to be a stuffy headshot, right? But you want to come across friendly, approachable, i.e. non-threatening, you know, those kinds of things. So I would say, get a good photographer to just take some really casual, I like natural backgrounds that are kind of blurred out, right? Mm-hmm. So you use the portraiture shots, but you've got the trees or leaves behind you.
Or with
you.
Your kids.
It's kind of, you know, that's kind of mid, you know, this mid, as opposed to headshot like this, a little bit. I would say, you know, maybe not too buttoned up, a little bit casual, business casual kind of thing. I think that will be a safe message to convey across any platform.
And my headshot that's in the program is untrue right now, because 7 months ago, I cut off my mid-length locks and showed up one day with no hair. And then I was also like, my book jacket had to be get done, and I was being too lazy to do a headshot shoot, so my books has me with locks in it. So, I mean, people just got a deal. I looked at, I feel like sometimes you get hung up on it, but I finally got new headshots made because I did something with Huffington Post, and I was like, oh, while I'm here, can you just shoot me right quick? But I was basically lying for like, still lying for 7 months.
Yeah.
People just gonna have to deal, man. I'm sorry about that.
Your mission is, I just would say that, you know, your mission and your story is incredibly noble and inspiring, and representing who you are in a candid way is absolutely appropriate. And, you know, there are a million great photographers out there who could do that without, like, busting your wallet, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Great. Thank you all. This was fantastic.
I know a good one in Philly if you need a recommendation. She captures people's essence perfect. And
yeah,
she's
I'll follow
gorgeous.
Up with you then. Yeah. Thank you.
Jasmine Alston. She's amazing.
Thanks, Kristen. She's been a woman of the week, too, on Ben FM. So
yay,
let's give her some love and support. Hi, how are you?
Hi, great. Good morning. My name is Kia Baker, and I am part of Love Nation, and I'm here for all the tomfoolery and the shenanigans. But I would like for you ladies just to share a word to our young women, our teens, our 20-year-olds on the art of branding, moving from that high school phase into college, college to the workforce, and with the advent of social media, not realizing how significant it is when all you have to do is put in someone's name and pictures and everything comes up. How can our younger ladies be better at branding themselves?
It is so critical. And because we take so many interns, and now I have a lot of friends whose daughters are sort of moving into that, let me get an internship, young job stage. I've actually been struggling with calling my best friend in Ohio and telling her that her gorgeous daughter, who is brilliant, has pictures all over Facebook that the first time she gets an interview, you know, we Google. I think we have to be able to have the conversations with them. If you have a child, follow them. The only reason I'm on Snapchat is to know what my 13-year-old is doing. And half the time it happens so fast and I can't see it, but I know there's something wrong going there. But we have to tell women that nothing is hidden anymore. Tell men also, right? You know, and that transition from all out there and leading the cool, like, sexy life on social will be a death knell to women. So we have to start to have those conversations and follow our kids and our nieces on social media and tell them, take it down.
Yeah. But also about building up proactively, right? So we
think in a different way.
Something to be said about, you have a digital footprint now.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes just the awareness of that. So I've been a big proponent, and I've spoken to so many parents in schools. Like because for me, I feel like kind of the anti-Kardashian of, like,
yeah.
for a generation to say, you know, it's not just all style. There's substance,
yeah.
right? It makes a difference. What's up here matters. And so I think with the digital footprint understanding, and they've ABG did the study, and they found, you know, that 90% of kids in America under the, like by the age of 2 already have a digital footprint.
Right.
Because their parents post pictures or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, look, you have a digital footprint, and I think that's sort of the challenge, but the opportunity for this generation is you have one, and you don't really have a say in if you have one, because inevitably it'll be defined for you.
Yeah.
The only question is, do you want to help define it, right? So how do you structure that so when college admission counselors take a look at it, because they do, because when your future employers take a look at it, because they do, because when your boyfriend's mother takes a look at it,
because
she does,
yeah.
Right? What do they find? How do you cultivate who you want to be online in a way that suits all, right, suits everything, not just with your friends and that personality? So I think, yes, one, explaining them that it matters, people are looking. Sometimes I think it's surprising. They're like, oh, I didn't realize everyone, you know, who would search me out or Google me. And it's true. It happens all the time. And two, knowing that you have power over it. You can clean up your Facebook profile. You can choose to have, you know, a more professional presence on LinkedIn. And yes, it makes a difference. So, I mean, I think it's a great message. I've been a big proponent of, hopefully, I think in the next 5 years, I would love to see schools have digital literacy classes.
Yeah.
Right? I should do those in certain schools.
I mean,
I've done those in schools.
It's huge. Yeah. And, you know, and I've done those workshops and keynotes, but I'm like, no, this needs to be a class, because home ec is a class.
Not
you know?
Really.
And it's important. Like, I get it. You know, at home ec is a class.
Not
like,
anymore.
I can Google how to stitch a button, right? Or YouTube, like, how to boil an egg. I can do that, but we don't teach kids how to use social platforms, how to build your personal brand. But I really do think that in the next 5 years, this will be part of curriculum, because we'll have to. We'll have to teach them. They're using Snapchat. How do you use it intelligently?
Remember, don't drink and dial? I always use that. Because I did it on the Schuylkill one day and called it the M and the, you know, Philly, we have no filter, the F in Schuylkill. Totally busted by my boss. So try to behave yourself on the tweet.
Great question.
We only have about 3 minutes left, so we've got two more folks.
Mine's quick. Hi, my name's James Lucas. I run a vegan clothing and accessory company called Grape Cat. I'm torn between prioritizing between running, branding my business versus branding myself. Mm-hmm. Is there a point when the business becomes more important or my brand becomes more important? Do I grow them at the same time?
I can address that because I was in a similar challenge. my personal brand developed and then my firm developed because of my personal brand. Mm-hmm. And then the growth of my firm, and we now are international in terms of global strategies, took precedent because I was taking, you know, responding to the demand and those kinds of things. And so my personal branding started, the effort I was putting into my personal branding decreased. But I'll tell you, it's really important to maintain both, but you don't have to do both equally as much. There might be time periods where you're elevating one versus elevating another, but I've now gotten, we're now bringing in someone to help with our company branding under my direction with blogs and other kinds of things. But I'll give an example. The personal brand is really important. We landed Toyota as a client at my firm because of my Twitter account. I was at a conference walking through a lobby at a hotel, and someone called out my name, Michelle, come over here. I go over. He says, I'm with Toyota. I follow you on Twitter. We need social media and strategic communications at our company. Here, sit down, meet so-and-so, and 2 weeks later, my firm had a contract, all under my personal brand.
Yep.
So they're both equally important, but you might need some help to help bolster the efforts on both sides.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, one more. We saved the best for last, maybe?
I hope so. Hi, everybody. My name is Mafe James. I am the owner and curator of www.luvonpurpose.com. Hey, Luvy. my question was, you guys had a lot of great points on branding, which I took from, but I had a question about it won't. You said a no won't kill you. So how did you take a no and make yourself stronger from that?
A no means I can't do it right now. So sometimes it means following up in like a month and a half and being like, hey, have you read the book now? Oh yeah, I have. Here's your blurb 2 hours later. So it's understanding that you can build on a no. Like you can always turn a no to a yes if you come the right way. So whatever that no is, how can you make it a yes? How can you make it to where the person can't say no to you? where they run out of excuses to say no to you. That's what you want to figure out. So even in business, when you walk in a room and you want to get an account, what you want to walk into is to basically convince these people and make it so good where they're like, we have no reason to say no to this person. So work on that. Be the person people can't say no to.
Got you. Thank you. Anybody else from the panel want to answer?
Yeah, I would augment. You know, no is just no, not now. No, not this. Oh, no, not this. But how about this?
Okay.
Finding the gaps where you can. I'm not deterred by no ever.
I actually have a sometimes no does mean no, even though you've done everything you can. Yeah. So what you have to do is first of all, not take it personally and devastate you, and look for the next six things where you're gonna get in and ask, you know? Yeah. So if it's, I have 10 calls and three of them said no, but there's still seven, and you know, you have to understand it, but most important, you shouldn't take it personally and feel totally defeated by it. Otherwise, you won't be able to reach out. I do think though, and agree with these guys, if you've made a connection to come back around, without asking for something, just to be who you are. Hey, touch and base, love to get coffee. You go to coffee and you're not asking for anything. You're still cultivating a relationship over time that could mean yes eventually.
Yeah. So
thank you.
I would say just there's two things, right? Timing. So there's a no that you get because the timing's not right, where follow-up is key. And then there's a no you get where it's not a good fit, right?
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And there'll be times where it's not a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. We turn away a lot of clients. We don't work with everyone because it's not a right fit, and it does have to feel that way. And I'm a big proponent of focus on the yes.
Yep.
It's so easy to get caught up on, like, that one no. Mm-hmm. You have 10 yeses waiting. Right, yeah. That deserves your energy should be spent there. So I don't let myself get too down for a no. I'm like, you know what? You gotta play with your dogs, you eat some chocolate, you move on. You focus on the yes. You focus on all the people who do wanna work with you, who are excited about what you have to offer, and let that drive you. For me, that's so much more powerful than trying to overcome the no.
We've gotta wrap it up. I'm so sorry to tell you that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shama, Michelle, Molly. Lovey. They might take questions while they're signing their books as well. So if you didn't get to ask a question here, please attend the book signing. Thank you so much for coming. What a great panel. What a great audience. You guys rock. Enjoy the rest of the conference and eat at Reading Terminal Market at some point while you're in Philadelphia if you're just visiting.